And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
"755 is Real" with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back to 755 is Real. I'm David O'Brien, brace writer for The Athletic, and I'm with a very special guest today. The great Dale Murphy, Braves icon, should be Hall of Famer. Will be, I'm quite sure, before too much longer. Welcome. Welcome, Murph. Good to have you, man.
Thanks, David. I'm pinch hitting you today. It feels good to pinch hit. I tried pinch hitting at the end of my career, and I wasn't very good. So I think I can do it today. I hope Eric's good and feeling better.
Yeah, Eric hurt his back, for you guys wondering where he is. He was doing some pretty crazy athletic fitness type stuff, I think. Or maybe not. I don't know how he hurt his back. But he hurt his back. He might just have fell out of bed for all I know. But he hurt his back, and he literally can't sit up and do this. So
yeah,
I'm sure he'll be back soon. But
well, that's good. I hope he's well.
But this is much better anyway. You Eric had a couple of great years, but you had a few more.
I really did have to pinch hit, you know, for a few at-bats in Denver.
And you had a bad back, didn't you? Or bad knees?
I had bad knee, but I gained a great brand new appreciation for pinch hitters.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was that closer for Miami? Right-hander, Hart, Brian.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. He was the one before Rob Nen. Okay.
Yeah.
Covered him a year.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but all I know is I got no chance. I need a few at bats a game, and man, that pinch hitting is tough duty. So anyway, I'm happy to pinch hit today for Eric.
That's gonna drive me crazy if I don't find it, so I'm gonna find it. 1995, Marlins. You're talking about a team that had Bobby Witt on it, by the way. I covered that team. Now that was Rob Nen was there.
93, their first year.
Yeah, their first year, because I started covering.
Well, I think was that their first year?
Yeah, 93. I started covering them in 97. The first year was 93. And I know the guy you're talking about. He was kind of a country boy.
Yeah.
Nasty slider, right?
I can't remember. I thought it was a splitter, but could.
Splitter, yeah, splitter. That's right, because that was the big end pitch at that time.
Yeah.
He had I know we're boring the hell out of people on here who's probably going, it's Brian Harvey. It was Brian Harvey.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Brian Harvey. Good. Yeah. He was nasty.
Hard and had a good split. So once the Rockies saw me pinch hit, they're like, all right, Murph, it's time to move on.
The Marlins went, they had some great closers for a while. Cause then they had Rob Nen, remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
He was damn good.
Yeah.
They had a couple others too, but listen, anyway, before we get started, we had a guy on Twitter, Tim Gordon, who I asked some people if they had any questions for you or comments, or whatever. This guy had a good one though, that I caught my eye right away. He said, I'd love to know what Murph would do if commissioner for a day. What changes would you implement?
Well,
catch him off guard, by the way. I did not give this to Murph beforehand.
Yeah, no, I would realign. I would realign 5 years ago. But it makes more sense now. We got the DH, and I think they're going to realign. I know it's – I've even heard Bud Seeley had a plan. But I think realignment would just I don't know what the negatives are, David, but, I mean, I'm talking about both New York teams in the same division, both L.A. teams in the same division. St. Louis and Kansas City, same division. Both Chicago teams and Milwaukee. I mean, I'd realign. Owners would love it, save money, travel. I think it would inject some electricity. I mean, can you, as a fan, what we got to do is attract casual fans. We got good fans, but I think casual fans would go to a Dodger Anaheim game if it was something on the line, you know, if it was so I think realignment would be the first thing. And then I'd take care of all the other little things. I'd try to be a little more, a proactive and even though I'm consider myself a traditionalist in baseball, it's time that these days and times do not call for a traditionalist running anything. And I think we got to, everything would be on the table. I'm talking about 7-inning games. Of course the pitch clock, of course that's coming, but I would put everything on the table and discuss and try it. We need a, you know, but I'd say to off, we can get on other subjects, but everything on the table to look at, to change the game. Other sports change the rules all the time. I know we're really proud of the fact that we don't change fast, but I think in this day and age, those people who don't change faster, you know, are going to leave some people behind. But I would realign. I get rid of the American League and National League. We don't really have it anyway, you know, now, especially with the DH. And I just think it's realignment. I just think it'd be really, really exciting. That would be number 1A on my list.
Regarding 7-inning games, I don't think we should go to 7-inning games, but I do strongly agree with shortening games, quickening them up. And we've had in this series that just ended with the Cubs, we had two games that were like 2.5 hours, and it was glorious, man. And they were good games.
Yeah.
One of them was a 4-hour mess, but the extra innings and all that. But two well-pitched games that were under two and a half hours. You had two pitchers that were quick, threw strikes. The pitch clock, I don't care about all the blowback you get or some of the resistance from some. You know, guys can come up with all the excuses on why it won't work. It works. It works. It's worked where they've used it in the minor leagues. It has immediately shortened games by like 15 to 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
20-second pitch clock, and you don't have to use it if you don't want to. If they want to do it just when there's nobody on base, that's a majority of time anyway. If pitchers want to say, you know, because if you use it when guys are on base, teams can start using it as strategy, knowing that if the clock is running out, the guy's not going to throw over. You know what I mean?
So
I can see that's a problem, but you can definitely use it when there's nobody on base, and that immediately cuts a lot of time out. And the other thing is not letting, you know, well, if you do that, you won't have to enforce hitters not being able to step out, do all the batting gloves, look down to the third base coach, talk to, you know, if you do the pitch clock, that kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah.
Like the other, yeah.
Well, but I always say, David, we all know that golf has a clock.
Yeah.
And so people don't know it. I am a really big opponent of a clock out in the center field. I think, you know, if you're a traditionalist, you don't want to see a clock out there. But here's what I would do. And I think umpires, you know, umpires, David, they would eat this up. Give it to the umpires.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like golf. Hey, you're on the clock. You know, you guys, you've abused it for a couple. You know what I mean? We just have the third base ump or an ump, you know, up in the press box, whatever, however we do it, and just warn them and say,
the signal,
you're on the clock.
Do a hand signal, do
Absolutely.
A certain hand
you're
signal,
on the clock.
Whatever.
You're on the clock, and we're going to start calling balls.
Yeah.
And then the home plate umpire, same thing with the hitter, get in or I'm calling a strike.
Yeah.
And just let them have at it. And so the umpires could really move this game, but a pitch clock, some kind of a time frame would absolutely work. It would be great.
Yeah, because you got to shorten the games, and there have been a lot more shorter games this year. What about the whole mess that's been so far with the balls? I mean, I'm so sick of the balls being an issue every year. I don't understand why MLB keeps thinking that they can tweak the balls in order to get the end results they want, whether it be when offense is down, they make the balls bouncier, and then they go too far, and then there's too much offense, and they make the – just use the same damn balls every year and let this work itself out. I don't understand this at all, why this is – like this year, from day one, I had pitchers and catchers telling me the balls are different this year. The seams are higher. And it's only now with Dr. Wills, who's the ball deconstructionist, the woman, the scientist that takes the balls apart yeah. and proves and had proved last year that two different balls were used. She has shown why the influx of humidors now in every ballpark, and they're only in about 10 before, now they're in every ballpark. But in some places, where it's humid, it's going to make the balls drier, but other places it's going to add humidity to them. And the result is fascinating. I hadn't thought about this. The balls, in the process of being shipped, stored in the humidor, sometimes not stored long enough, the seams themselves don't adapt like the balls do. In other words, the balls become less moist in a humid place. They're going to become less moist. They'll become a little more moist in a dry place. But the seams don't necessarily react the same way, and they expand in effect. And that's why that would explain why the seams are higher this year, because MLB insisted they did not raise the seams, which makes sense. I don't even know how they would do that, but they say they didn't. But that would be why the seams are high, because I've had pitchers and catchers. Travis Darno told me second series of the year, the seams are higher this year, and that's why you're seeing these long would-be home runs that are at a 30-degree launch angle that normally would go 430 feet and land in the 15th row of the seats are being caught at the warning track because they're getting up, and it greatly increases the drag. When they get up there, they slow down, and then instead of having a normal arc like that into the seats, they're going, and then they're going and dropping, you know, because of drag. And that would totally explain that. And I had, and then, and also just one more thing on the balls. Darno told me, the pitchers agreed, that they're also slick in some places you go where the humidors are making them slick. The balls are slick because they went, they're kind of chalky, they say. And that would explain why you're getting so many guys hit by pitches on a lot of breaking balls. 43% of the hit by pitches so far have been on breaking balls.
Really?
Yeah. And I think Charlie Morton's been affected by it too. Although, to his credit, he's not said one word about the ball. But he's a guy that relies so much on spin rate. You know, he's like king of the spin rate. And that could have an effect on a guy like that if the seams are a little different.
Well, do you remember that home run? Was it last night as we talked? Did Austin Riley hit?
Yeah.
Really high.
Yeah.
And there was I thought it was halfway back in the stands, and it ended up being, I don't know, four or five rows back.
Yeah,
he crushed it. I mean, maybe that's the kind of – what's that?
He crushed it.
Yeah, I crushed it. But it ended up not going as far as I thought it was going to go. I mean, he got all of it, I thought. And I think maybe that was affected the drag. I don't know what to say except that I agree with you. I didn't know so many clubs were using the
– It's mandatory.
Yeah,
the humidor.
The humidors?
It's mandatory this year, and I think that they did not do enough research on the effect it was going to have on balls. The aim is to have the balls the exact same in every climate by having the humidors. But as the scientists explained, that's not what happens because the ball is changed while it's going through that process, depending on what the climate is there. And then once the balls get out, you got to keep them in there long enough. They're keeping them in there for 2 weeks. They say it's not long enough.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's you're just chasing your tail trying to figure this all out.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it becomes, and then it just becomes a point of discussion that it doesn't, you know, it becomes almost something that becomes, you know, you never hear the NBA talk about the ball.
Right.
I've only heard one conversation about the football back with
exactly
Tom Brady. I mean, we're talking about it every year. It's just, I totally agree with you. We just got to somehow get everybody focusing in but it's an interesting problem. I agree with you. I got to figure out how not to mess with the balls. I thought they were only trying to deaden the ball a little bit in Denver, which, I think Denver's a real problem, David.
It makes sense to use the humidor in Denver, but why did they feel like they have to do it everywhere? They don't do it in other sports, like you said.
Yeah,
and they don't change the football in Denver so that they don't kick long field goals, you know, at altitude.
Yeah, but they don't deflate it any.
No, exactly. Yeah. But you know, if you want to use the humidor in Denver, whatever you're trying to do there to make it, because the game is just different in Denver, and I don't know that it's ever not going to be different. Because the outfield is so huge Yeah. It's not the home runs that kill you there. It's, as you know, it's all those singles that drop in front of the outfielders and all those doubles and triples to the gap. You hit it the gap there. The league triple leader should be from the Rockies every year.
Yeah. Every year. You know, part of a bigger discussion, and I don't know what you'd ever do, but I think Denver's a problem, Dave.
Yeah.
Being in the league. I think they probably thought about this, but it's, you know, it's 5,000.
Yeah.
You know, we know it's a mile high. I mean, when's the last free agent pitcher they signed?
Yeah, it's going to be tough, man. They've tried. They got to overpay them, and then they leave as soon as they can. And they're going to have to draft and develop their own pitchers and just keep doing it. But it is a problem. And the problem
is a problem.
It's a great sports city, though, and they draw well, you know?
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But I didn't realize everybody had the humidors and, you know, so that's a problem. It's just too bad because it doesn't need to be a discussion every year.
I agree with you. Let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You were talking about realignment. It made me think, what can you imagine a rivalry between Seattle, the Sonics, and Portland, where you're from, if they both had teams, how big that would be? And then also San Francisco's close enough, you know, that you would have, you know, just that whole corner up there you'd have, but those that rivalry there. And especially in pandemic era, you know, who knows how many more of these coronaviruses we're going to have and how many more times we're going to have to, like spring training, they shortened it or they made everybody play teams within like an hour this year. So once again, even with the pandemic dying, we did that. So it only makes sense if you're ever going to realign, now would be the time to do it, looking ahead towards maybe fighting something like that where you're not on those long, long flights and people don't have to, you know, travel so far to see your team.
Absolutely.
You'd have a lot. If Atlanta played, Atlanta's not a great example because there's not a lot of teams down here.
Yeah.
But if you were to get a team like in Nashville, for instance.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if Braves fans are say you were talking about realigning in California, if you had Anaheim, San Diego, LA, Arizona, you know, in the same division, and then you had New York, you had Philly, both New York teams, Boston in the same division, like, and Washington, D.C., for instance. Those teams would be
Baltimore. Yeah,
Baltimore, whatever. It would be
whatever.
Yeah. There's not that. It wouldn't have to be radical there, but it would be, like you said, eliminate the leagues would be. If you're not going to realign, you need to have an even number of teams in each league so that you're not constantly having to play an interleague, because this year you have to, opening day, you have to have an interleague series because there's 15 teams in each league. So
you
got to fix that. And they need to get the team out of Oakland if they're not going to get a new stadium. I love a team being in Oakland.
Right.
But it can't survive as it currently is. And it's like the ownership now is trying to force their hand because they're not promoting it. They've got rid of everybody. They're drawing flies there in that huge stadium. It's like they're saying, move us or build us a new stadium. That's what they're basically saying. And you can't keep asking the A's to be competitive in that environment. And same thing with Tampa. If they're not going to get a new stadium, and Tampa – God bless them, because every year they have a competitive team. They do the best job, the front office, and against all odds in the AL East against these big payroll teams. Every year they're competitive. But yet they play in this stadium that nobody wants to go indoors on a nice day in Florida. you know, and play in that antiseptic dome. It's just not a good environment. And drive from Tampa across that causeway to St. Pete at rush hour. So they got to build a stadium in Tampa, Ybor City area, whatever, retractable dome, whatever, just something more attractive. And they've been trying forever, though. They talked about that Montreal split. That was never going to work.
Oof.
Build two stadiums when you can't get one built, you know?
Yeah.
But if they're not going to get stadiums in Oakland and Tampa, you move those right away. You move one to your hometown, Portland. Move the other to, say, Nashville, Charlotte, you know, some other places. Vegas wants a team. There are places that could really support a team. Now, I know you believe in Portland, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think baseball's good in the fact that we don't like to move teams around, and Manfred is like, you know, I'm going to give him a chance. And, you know, I think the NFL's been burned a few times moving teams too quick. So I get that. But again, this day and age, it's not like that. It's like, it's like we got to get on top of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've been in touch with the Portland Diamond Project. They are still organized. They're funded. They're building relationships. They're still very optimistic. Portland is, a couple summers ago, we know, unfortunately, there were a lot of problems in downtown Portland. David, I might share this with the people listening. The Portland group has said, you know, we're looking a little bit more suburban now and do what the Braves did with building the Battery and a whole complex on 50, 60 acres. And so this is still very optimistic. I agree with you. Seattle and Portland, soccer-wise,
and
basketball,
the soccer Timberwolves.
Teams, and when they had a basketball team, which I see your Sonics jersey on, and there's some good rumors about getting a franchise back.
The glove,
there. yeah,
the Rain Man.
There you go. I mean, it's a great rivalry. It's a great regional rivalry. And David, what people got to remember is this is a regional sport.
Yeah.
This
Now more than ever.
Yeah, exactly. It's regional.
Regional networks think, are taking
well,
over.
Well, why would we want a team in Portland? It's because the Pacific Northwest could support another team. Remember, they're only proposing a 25,000-seat stadium with a retractable roof, and it's going to be beautiful. David, this ballpark is going to be like something no one has seen before. It's not going to look traditional. It's going to look forward thinking, and the architects, they've told me they do not want to do brick. So it's going to be fun. I'm still very optimistic about Portland.
There is so much money in the Northwest now. All these people from California, for better or worse, went to Seattle. The cost of living there now is through the roof. You can't afford to live there. Now those people are moving to Portland. But the good part of that is there's so much money and corporate money that there you can support a baseball team, because you have to have a lot of corporate dollars to support a sport where you play 81 home games. It's not like football where a place like Charlotte or Jacksonville, not a good example.
Yeah.
Jacksonville can support football. They could not support baseball.
Exactly. That's why I think I used to be kind of interested in Vegas, but I think Vegas can support an NFL team because of, you know, 8 home games.
Yeah.
And the attraction of the NFL and the Raiders for, you know, a nationwide thing. But can they support a regional 81 home days?
They don't have Fortune 500 company. They don't have a lot of Fortune 500 companies there, do they?
Exactly.
I don't know that they have
And
many.
David, you would not believe the list of outdoor companies. I mean, just off the top of my head, Under Armour and Nike and Columbia. You know, these are huge corporate partners for the team in Portland. So they're ready to go. You know, we got stadiums and small things like that to work out. But
Nike could build one with their own money, man, if they wanted to do it. If Phil Knight got behind this thing, it's done, man. He's got so much money.
Absolutely.
If they could get their brand around that place, look what they just did to the track stadium at Oregon. It is gorgeous. It's like the best in the world, man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So very optimistic about Portland, and it'd be fun in Nashville. I don't think Vegas has a organization.
Right.
I don't think they have an organization that's running things. Portland is building relationships with MLB, and the most important relationship in any state, but especially Oregon, is politically. Yeah. And they got really good support politically.
Yeah. Why? The only hope for Nashville, of course, is the reason it supports a lot of sports is the transcendent. You always have tourists there. But if you were to have like the pandemic or something that killed tourism that one year, can you imagine how empty the stadium would be? You know, so that's the problem there. But, you know, the reasoning would be that it might work there is that you have this built-in audience of people spending money at the casinos and they go to an air-conditioned place at night to see the team from their hometown. But but it's corporate dollars that make the thing work because you see those suites like at Oracle Park in San Francisco. They have suites that ring the entire stadium from one end to the other. You know, and they're all sold with all that Silicon Valley money and all that tech money. And Portland has, like you said, there's a lot of corporate dollars there and a lot of rich folks there that would buy in a 25,000 seat stadium. The prices of the tickets is going to be pretty high, probably like a Fenway. There's a lot of money there that's going to pay for those seats.
Yeah. And I think
Nashville would too.
Right. I think people wondering about Portland too. We have long, this is going to sound weird, but we have long summer evenings that are dry. We got rain in spring and fall, but our summers are beautiful, and we would be one of the less we would probably have less rainfall than some of the cities that are already in the league.
Well, people don't understand that like Seattle gets a ton of rain, but it's but they don't get as much rain as like the Florida, not even close, because it's like drizzle. It's drizzle.
Exactly. It's
like Seattle's dome that's not even enclosed because the sides are open because it's like perfect climate. It's just a little drizzle.
Yeah. So
it would work. I would love to see a team there.
Expansion and realignment, I think, is exciting.
Or if not expansion, then moving those two teams. But I like expansion too. Either way, I think you've got to get
absolutely.
Let's grab a couple more of these while we're on here with while we're on talking about some things before we get to Acuna's return and all that. A couple of others here. Let me see. You know, you had a lot of people saying that it's a shame that you're not, it's a damn crime that you're not in the Hall of Fame. And I agree.
Thank you.
Let's see. And I think it's only a matter of time with the Veterans Committee, with the ERA Committee, that will right that wrong for you and Fred McGriff.
Well, thank you. You know, David, they changed it.
Yeah. I'm part of the committee that does the ballot, that selects the ballot. We don't vote on the Hall of Famers, but we select the ballot that we give to them. So we're going to do that soon. But it's only two eras now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just have to wait and see what the effect is. But it's interesting they've changed the rules again. So we'll have to wait and see. I still have some, you know, some very ardent supporters, and we'll have to see what happens.
And I think you're going to have more, you know, now that you got the three Braves Hall of Fame pitchers that are in there, Chipper's in there, when one of those guys gets on a committee, that kind of thing, because unfortunately, I hate to say this, but it's so political when it gets to that era committee, because Harold Baines got in because Tony La Russa stood up and fought for him and argued for him until he got enough people to agree with him. And that's just, it becomes like, you know, and that's the way the NFL Hall of Fame is from the get-go. It's all political like that. They get in a room and talk about the guys. And I think the Baseball Hall of Fame works a lot better because, you know, the writers start with their own ballots at home doing this. And especially nowadays, I think the writers put a lot more thought into it than they used to.
Yeah.
You know, and so I still like our process better than the other Hall of Fames, but I know a lot of people disagree, but they should look into those other ones and see how political they are.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you know, any system has certain political aspects to it. I mean, you're not going to get away with that. So anyway, I remain optimistic and we'll see what happens. But I'm very appreciative of people are, you know, very supportive you know, I'm still optimistic.
Hey, by the way, did you know that Ron Washington turns 70 today? Is he just amazing or what? When you were out there the other day, you were on the field before the game. To see him doing what he does before the game, he's 70 years old, I think it's just amazing.
Oh, he is amazing, and he loves his guys, you know.
Yeah.
And his guys love him, and they love to work. And this work ethic, you know, it's an accumulative effect, David. You know, you do this,
yeah,
these drills he does, it, and you're doing them 162 times,
yeah,
and you're doing during spring training. I mean, you're going to get better. And
yeah,
and you need a coach that will say, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
He loves his guys. He loves his team. He's just, 70. I mean, you know, I'm going to have trouble running around 18 holes in a golf cart at 70, but he's been a fantastic addition to this organization.
We've talked about him. Eric and I talked about him a lot because Eric, you know, just both of us so much respect for him. But I don't think it can be overstated the impact that he's had on this team because of what you just said. Just the repetitive, the work, the repetitions these guys get, they're going to get better physically from all the work. But I think mentally, whether it's consciously or subconsciously for some of these kids, he sets a standard that I'm out here working, busting my ass every day, and I'm out here doing this, doing additional work, not getting paid extra for it, but I'm out here for every one of you guys that wants to do this one-on-one before we start the regular day's activities. And he works one-on-one with every one of those infielders and any of the outfielders that want to do it too. You'll see Marcelo Ozuna occasionally there. You saw last year, you saw Jock Peterson when he first got over. He had heard so much about Jock's work that he was down there doing it on his knees, taking up one hopper center. But I think he sets such a standard of work that these guys just in their minds start to think, this is how it's done. This is how you get better. If this guy can be out here doing it for us, the least we can do is to be out there doing this extra work that he expects us. And every one of them just basically is out there every day. I mean, they just incorporate that into their daily routine is this is part of it, even though it's extra and you don't really have to be there until they start BP or stretch. They're out there before working with him. And I just think he's the infielders. And you saw it last year with them playing every day. Everybody in the infield played every day unless they have a really serious injury, a pretty serious injury they can't play, like a hamstring or something.
Well, a lot of people probably assume that this takes place everywhere.
Right, and it doesn't.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And, again, I don't know how long these workouts take. That's really not the point. The point is you practice, you know, it's like taking 10 swings off a batting tee, perfect swings a day is better than taking, you know, 50 bad swings and trying to hit the ball all over the place. So it's what young players need to remember is it's the cumulative effect of doing a little work every day. But I agree with you. Not only physically you'll get better, but mentally it'll ingrain into your mind that this is your job.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is important. You know, this is what we do, and we do it every day. And I hear today Dansby's the best defensive shortstop in some metrics or something?
Which metric, but I think this year his defense is really high, and defensive runs saved are high. They're not quite as high as like Correa, I don't think, but they're high.
Well, and David, you've watched Austin Riley play.
Oh my God!
You know more than me, but what I see, I see stuff all the time. I mean, all the time.
He's become an above-average defender in a span of like 2 years, and he credits Wash for a lot of that. And so did Freddie. Absolutely. Freddie credited him for help in making Freddie one of the best two or three defensive first basemen in baseball, if not the best. Olson raved about him. Olson just worked with him his first year in Oakland when Wash was still there. So he really was happy to come here and be able to work with Wash again. We don't even need the relationship he has with Ozzie. Ozzie would tell you there's been no more important person probably in his career than Wash so far.
Wow.
What he's done for Wash, what he's done for Ozzie. Those two have a great relationship. It's like big brother, little brother, and the sparring, the fun they have with each other, cussing each other out in good nature every day. It's just so much energy that Wash helps bring to the – he's got a thing this year. Every day at the end of batting practice – started with a couple of guys. Now it's like four of the players, not veterans, four of the players will line up behind the screen, you know, at first base, that put the screen up during BP. Four guys will line up behind that, put their hands behind them. And the bet is that they can't stand there stationary. Wash is near the batting cage, and Wash hits fungos because he's a master with the fungo. He can hit it precise, right? Yeah. So Wash hits it. They're right behind the screen. Wash can hit it over the screen and at them, and they have to hold and not move. And he'll nobody else can really do it. You know, can hit a fungo perfectly like that. But Wash does it. One of them will go, the ball will be coming at him and be like, or someone will let it hit him in the chest or whatever. But it's every day they're doing this now. Olson was over there the other day with him doing it. So it's pretty fun to see it every day. But to see Wash do that, handle a fungo like he does, man, it's amazing what that guy can do with a bat.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Right over the screen.
I'm going to watch for that next time.
They have fun. It makes fun. They love going to the ballpark. Yeah.
It's fun. Your work can be fun, but it's going to help you. You know, I worked at my high school coach's Jack Dunn there in Portland, Oregon, at his Little League camp when I was a kid. And parents would say, oh, man, my son's improved so much. And we were always like, you know, it wasn't anything we did. They took 100 swings a day. You know, you do these things and you have a coach to help you, you're going to improve. That's just the way it goes.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
I mean, it's just anecdotal, I know, but from watching teams take BP, visiting teams, and then when the Braves are on the road, watching the home teams, the really good teams, for the most part, it seems like they're the ones out there having fun. They're not the ones out there with grim looks on their faces and, you know, stern looks and guys looking, rolling their eyes or just out here, you know, being out there to be out there because they have to be. It's the guys that are out there yucking it up and having fun, but doing their work at the same time. I mean, it's not football, you know. Everything doesn't have to be dead serious. You're playing 162 games. If you're going to be out there taking BP every day or a little bit of infield, you need to be out there having fun doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, you got to look at the makeup of your coaching staff, the makeup of your players. I mean, Jock Peterson came over last year and brought a lot of fun to the team and
just kind the right of relaxed time.
Him. But, yeah, you need guys and coaches like that.
Yeah, and Snit has a great coaching staff in that regard because they got some fun guys, you know, with Wash being at the top of the list. But there's some other guys, too. A guy like Walt Weiss, he's a funny dude, you know.
Absolutely.
And they've got some really – Eddie Perez is on the staff. So they've got just enough guys to keep it loose and one, you know, in kind of every department of every group of guys. So it's still a good mix. And that's why I don't really worry about this team like I would some that start slow. Because, like, you know, some teams start slow, and I think they can be start to have some kind of finger-pointing behind the scenes, you know.
Right.
Now, off the record, it's so-and-so. You don't hit that with this team. And so far, I've seen no change in their demeanor at all during this, you know. A lot of fans are panicking already, you know, because the Mets are so much better this year than they've been. You're down 5 games, you know, 3 weeks into the season. But I haven't seen any of that with the Braves. And another part of that was, of course, they knew Acuna was going to be back soon, and now he's back, and I don't know if you watched the game last night, but there was an energy at that ballpark. I mean, there's been a lot of energy anyway this year coming up because big crowds this year, but there was a different energy, and the players noticed it too, just having Acuna there. And when he was introduced, it was electric, man.
I was actually there, David.
You're here right now. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I'm here right now. I'm actually, you know, down here in Peachtree City with our son Jake and his family. But, yeah, we were there, and I mean, it was the first. I mean, it's the first thing I heard in the morning. You know, I woke up and either looked at my phone or did something, and the very first thing everybody in this area knew was that Ronald was playing. And
it overshadowed the draft, which is hard to do, the NFL draft, at least in Atlanta market.
Yeah, in Atlanta. You're right. In the South.
Yeah.
And so there was quite a few thousand extra people.
Yeah.
Just because he's a game changer for a team. He's a game changer for the sport of baseball. It's great to have him back.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows how great a player he is. He's one of the five best players when he's healthy in baseball. But I would argue that there's no player that's more dynamic and more fun, exciting to watch than Ronald Acuña because of all that he does, how much fun he has, the style that he plays with. You know, the young guys, the young fans love the, if you ask little leaguers who their favorite player is now down here, it's him. I mean, God bless Freddie Freeman. I hated to see him go, and Freddie still was the face of the franchise. And I think still was with a majority of the older fans, people my age, you know, whatever. But the young kids, they love Acuña. And they love Ozzie because they can identify with Ozzie because he's so small. You know, they do love Ozzie and the way he plays. But Acuña just has that, as Austin Riley told me before the game last night, he just has that swagger, man. You just have it or you don't. But he has, it's all about the swag with him. But playing hard, too. It's not like he's just all about substance or about style. This is a guy with five tools and an incredible player that even if he was the most boring guy in the world, you know, as far as how he wears his uniform or how he goes about it, you know, if he was like Austin Riley and just played, he'd still be a great player. Right.
Like me.
But he adds the panache on top of it. So you add all that together and it's special.
Well, you know, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
What did you say, panache? When I played, but I didn't. So you can't really force it. Austin Riley's kind of like me, Freddie. You know, we're all kind of. But you absolutely. I've said this a number of times. Chemistry works when you put different chemicals together.
Yeah.
And you need it for your team. You need it for the sport of baseball. He's fun. He's great. His tools are unlimited. And so it's great to see him back. And, you know, baseball just needs to remember this. David, Shohei Ohtani. I mean, this guy, but he doesn't have a lot of flash and exuberance.
Right.
But that's neither here nor there. It's who he is.
Right.
Mike Trout's the same way. Right. Not a lot of flash and exuberance. Right. They're great, but kids like flash and exuberance, you know, this is a lot of kids watch a lot of stuff on their phones and see highlights and they want to see chains. They want to see chains jangling everywhere. So go for it.
And they like to see guys who show their emotions. Like you say, you can't force that. If you're a guy that doesn't wear your emotions on your sleeve, you can't try to do it. But if you are one, Then I like that Snit is not a manager that tells them, all right, cool it a little bit. You know, they let them be themselves. And that's important because the kids do identify with people who show just as much emotion as they do playing in the sandlot, you know, where they're flipping bats in the sandlot, you know?
Yeah.
These guys are doing it on a major league field.
Yeah.
And it's almost like telling them, it's okay to do this, man, to be a kid playing it because they're adults playing a kid's game and getting made $10, $15, $20 million, $30 million to do it.
Yeah.
Why be grim about it? Enjoy it, man.
Yeah.
You're the luckiest people in the world. Have fun.
Absolutely. And it sends a message to those who watch you. I mean, again, you can't force it, but I think one of the reasons why I like Bryce Harp is he's emotionally invested in the game, and you want to see that as a fan.
Yeah.
You want to see these guys playing hard, hustling, you know, getting upset. I mean, it is hard to force it if it's not you, and you don't want to force it. You got to be yourself, but you also got to have that fire burning inside of you. And it's either in, but baseball really benefits from exuberance. It's kind of like golf. I mean, I love the sport. I love the guys, but it would be awesome to see a little bit more stuff like happens in Phoenix at the tournament there. I mean, it's electric. We love to see these golfers that they're human. And I love Ronald Acuna for a lot of reasons, and he's a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, it's like, and the fire burns within a guy like an Austin Riley or a guy like Andrelton Simmons was like as competitive as players I'd ever seen when he played here. Sure. After the game, after a loss, he was crushed. He was crushed. Any loss, you know, John Smoltz, you know, everybody has it inside. The great, great players do. Most of them do. But not everybody shows it. So when you can mix the guys on the team that some are boring, like Nick Markakis was, but nobody hated to lose more than Nick Markakis. He just didn't show his emotions. Whether he hit a home run or struck out four times, he was the same guy. But it's fine to have a guy like that, and then a guy like Ronald Acuna and Ozzy Albies playing right next to him. And Nick loved those guys, by the way. Nick had a great relationship with those guys. He understood. Yeah. He understood not everybody's the same. So I that's why I like this Braves team still to really do some good things this year, and because the chemistry is so good and so important that's not going to hold them back. Instead, it's going to help them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they're gonna be fine.
How about Kyle Wright? By the way, how about Kyle Wright?
That was
what a story he is.
He's been fun to watch this year and see his maturation this ball club's going to be in the thick of things. No question about it.
Kyle last night didn't even have his good stuff.
Yeah.
And he walked four guys because he only walked like two or three before that. But he still only gave up three hits, one run, four walks, had eight strikeouts, which is the routine for him now. He's 3-0 with a 1.13 ERA.
Wow.
He has completely turned around his career now. Throwing the curveball now like 35% of the time, and the slider like under 10% of the time. He's gone away from the slider to the curve, which was his big pitch in college. He had gotten away from it because at the time when he was coming up in the minors, early in the minors, analytics were telling pitchers, every pitcher, regardless of, you know, whether it was good or bad for him, was stressing sliders and heaters up in the zone. That was what our sinkers down. I'm sorry. But analytics were saying throw sliders. So everybody started throwing sliders, and he got away from throwing the curve. And once he, you know, a couple of years ago, he sat down, Ben Sestanovich, the farm director, and the pitching coordinator, Davis, sat him down and said, you got to start throwing this. You got a great curveball. You got to start throwing it more. And he's got back to that. So between starting to throw the curveball more and then working with Zach Sorensen, the mental skills coach, mental performance coach, getting that part, because innings used to spiral on him. Like last night, the way he started last night, that would have spiraled on him in the past, and he'd have been gone in two innings. He's got the mental approach down now. And then I think the final kind of piece on top of it was working with this Ben Brewster he's an outside pitching guru.
Yeah.
From Tread Athletics. This guy's had big results with a lot of pitchers. The Braves let him work with this guy last year. Last summer, he started working with him on his footwork and his delivery. So now he's in this great position like he used to be in college. And this combination of it all has come together. And if you look at his numbers in the second half last year at Gwinnett, don't look at his overall numbers because he had some bad starts in the first half. But his second half numbers at Gwinnett were tremendous. They bring him up and he pitches great in the World Series. Terrific that when he came in and bailed out Tucker Davidson in the first inning, or Dylan Lee in the first inning. So he had that great outing in the World Series. And I was like a lot of people that thought, you know, when he had this great spring this year, that it was because of the momentum from the World Series. No, it was the momentum that started last year at Gwinnett and throwing this curveball now. That curveball is basically unhittable. Guys are hitting like 120 against it.
Well, if you're a four-pitch pitcher, you don't want to just be a sinker-slider pitcher, you know. But because to me, a curveball sets up a high fastball.
Right. And he's throwing heaters up in the zone, too. Yeah.
Right. It's like Tiger Woods when he practices, he has nine windows, you know, that he visualizes 20 yards or 50 yards out in front of him. He hits those nine windows. A pitcher's got to use the whole strike zone to be effective.
Right.
If you're a two-pitch pitcher, you better have electric stuff. I mean, I'm talking to, you know, a closer.
Yeah.
But if you're a starter and you want to go seven innings like he did, you got to go high, low, inside, outside, fast, slow. and a curveball is a great off-speed pitch that sets up a high fastball. You can throw it out of the zone. Your fastball doesn't have to be in the zone. You'll get guys space. But a shout-out, David, I've known Zach Sorensen for quite a few years. Lives in southern Utah, and he's an up-and-comer. He's worked a lot with the minor league guys. I've talked to him a lot. He knows what he's doing, and wouldn't be surprised. I know the Tampa Bay Rays, but baseball is slow to change on this stuff. But I will not be surprised within a short time. Every ball club should have a full time mental coach at the big league level.
Yeah, really we're seeing that definitely going that direction. A performance coach, whatever you want to call him, most teams are starting to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
He's got 34 strikeouts in 24 innings. I think is up to what, like 6 or 8 walks now. That's it. And he's second in the majors in strikeouts behind Carlos Rodon with the Giants, who's having a terrific year. He's got 38 strikeouts.
What's Kyle Wright's top speed on his fastball?
96.
Where's he sit at?
He sits like 95, 96.
Wow. Okay.
Well, yeah, he throws plenty hard. And it's got the sinker. It's got the four seamer. He still throws a slider occasionally, but he's got that nasty curve, man. Yeah. And he's got a changeup that'll occasionally throw in there too. But the curveball is over 30% of the time now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know Fried's going to his changeup a lot. Man, when you got that combo of stuff, I mean, you know, I don't care what they say. I know we're not going complete innings, but boy, 6 or 7 innings every start, you know, is if that's your goal.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just fantastic. That's I think you got, you know, don't look at 5. Don't look at a quality start as being 6. You know, get into that 7th inning. That's what I would try to do. If, you know, the old days of trying to go 9, I get it. Go 7.
Yeah.
And to go 7. If you're going to go through the lineup twice, you gotta be able to show.
Yeah,
you gotta be able to save your fastball for the third at bat, as opposed to showing him all your stuff the first at bat.
Yeah,
you know, and so anyway, 4 or 5 pitches, or 3 or 4 pitches in different locations.
Yeah,
it's fun to see these guys work and kind of, you know, you just don't want to see your starters say, "I can blow these guys away for 2."
Right.
Two trips through the lineup. You know, it just is not going to – I just don't think it's good for your bullpen. I don't care how many guys you got down there.
Yeah, I agree, man. He's this is a guy that in his first 4 years, because he'd go up and down, he had starts and appearances for 4 years. His first 4 years of the big leagues before this year, 59 strikeouts, 48 walks, and 70 innings. Now he's got – 34 strikeouts and 6 walks. And 4 of those walks were last night. He had 26 strikeouts and 2 walks in his first 3 starts.
Oh, that's unreal. That's
league-leading whip before last night. I mean, this guy, he is the pitcher now that the Braves hoped they would get when they drafted him 5. He's every bit that right now. He pitches like this.
It takes time, David. It takes time to figure out how to get through lineups in the big leagues.
Everybody's got their own journey, don't they? Some takes 1 year, some takes 5, some takes 8.
Exactly. Pitchers, it takes time, and you just gotta hope your guy stays healthy, you know, long enough to learn how to get through a big league lineup. Because in college, and David, you know this, even in AAA, you get through the first 5 guys, AAA just doesn't have depth.
Right.
You know, but to get through a big league lineup, and especially now with the DH.
Especially now, yeah.
It sounds like he's coming into his own. Exciting stuff.
Yeah, he just looks like a different pitcher on the mound, man. He's got so much confidence now in the way he's standing. It's like, what was it? Darno told me, you can just see him walking through the clubhouse. He looks taller, you know?
That's just cool. It's
the way he's carrying himself. But he said,
yeah, that's cool.
You know, he's relying so heavily now on the hard curveball that he had in college, and he had it first year in the minors, and then he got away from that, like I said, because of the analytics. He's pounding the strike zone with sinkers, 4 seamers up in the zone. And then the confidence part of it has just been huge. I mean, it's just it's not one thing, you know, it's all of it together. But that curveball, getting back to that, his pitch really gave him that confidence that he can throw that for strikes and get guys, that's his out pitch, man.
That's exciting. I'm looking forward to watching it starts a little closer now that you've mentioned those things.
What, they've won 8 or 9 games. They've won all 4 of his starts.
Wow. That's great. Yeah. Good kid, too.
Really good kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
Classy individual. So yeah, last night, even though Acuña last night at hit was great, Acuña admitted after the game, he goes, I was too emotional in my first few at bats. He said it was every bit as exciting as opening or his first game in the big leagues, his debut,
yeah,
getting to the park and all that. And it got the best of him because he was just amped up. He said, I kind of settled in later. He had that single to right. But he had 2 stolen bases last night. The team only had 3 stolen bases all year before last night. And him and Dansby had 1 on the double steal with him. So I think he's going to bring that component to the team now because he's faster now. He said that before the surgery because he worked so much on form and on strengthening his legs after the ACL surgery. So that's got to make other opponents cringe because this is a guy that came within 3 steals of being a 40-40 guy in his first full season. His only full season, really. And that was only because he hurt his hamstring at the end of the year. He'd have been a 40-40 guy, the youngest ever.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like being a hitter with runners moving. I mean, it gets defensive out of position. I know we're not in the era of 80-90 stolen bases, but I'll never believe that baseball doesn't benefit from runners moving.
Yeah.
And, if I'm hitting and I got runners on first and second, and let's say it's 2-0 or 3-1 where you're pretty confident that the pitcher's going to throw a strike, those guys move and the whole infield opens up. You know, you just got to get the ball on the ground somewhere and you got an RBI. You know, if you hit a double or whatever, just guys moving. And, I we don't have to do it all the time. That's one thing about analytics, David, I don't like is when they say the hit and run doesn't work. I say that doesn't mean never.
Right. You know, agreed.
It doesn't mean never. Just do it once in a while. Keep people honest and, boy, you can start some big innings with some runners moving.
Well, that's like analytics say that bunting never makes sense either. Well, occasionally it does, man, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But
maybe not now with the DH.
Yeah. Ronnie Acuña talked about he wants to run more now because he feels faster, right?
Yeah.
Well, with him running, think about the thought of this now that he's got Matt Olson hitting second, and Matt Olson can hit some doubles, man, and hit the ball out of the park, obviously, and get singles too. And then you got Austin Riley hitting third. Ozuna, who's a lot closer now to his form from 2 years ago than he was last year. Ozuna looks pretty good too. And then you got Albies 5. You got Darno, one of the better hitting catchers, 6th. You got Duvall, who hit 30-some home runs last year, hitting 7th. You got Demerit, who's another big story right now, too. He's only played 5 games, started 3 of them, but he's looked really good. I've been impressed with him. Another guy that, you know, we talk about it takes some guys longer to develop than others. He's 20. Yeah. He's only 27. It feels like he's been around forever.
Right.
But he looks like a different player now than when he was a prospect with the Braves years ago.
Right, right.
He's filled. He really looks good physically, but he drives the ball the other way. He looks good in the outfield. He came up as an infielder, but he looks good in the outfield. He's made 2 great plays in the outfield. So he's going to get a chance to play now with Rosario out. And he might be the answer in left field with Ozuna DHing.
Right. No, I like I said, I love the lineup.
And Dansby Swanson hit 9th. That's pretty good lineup.
No, absolutely. A little funky start.
For Dansby, a lot of whiffs.
Yeah, and Duvall, we got to get him going. But
a lot of whiffs for him too, yeah.
You know, this club's going to – I'm like I say, I think, you know, with this club, it'll come down to probably last month. You know, again, they're going to be in the thick of things. And hopefully, again, things will be clicking then.
Mets are tough, man. This is not the Mets of recent years. It is finally, the new owner's money. And they're getting the Francisco Lindor that we saw in Cleveland, not the one of last year.
Yeah.
When I think the change in leagues and the expectations on him last year and the crowd getting on him early when he was struggling, I think that all kind of piled up on him last year and it snowballed.
Yeah.
Because we're seeing the Cleveland version of Lindor now and their pitching staff, man, without DeGrom, before Castano, who was the he gave had a bad outing yesterday, but before that, the highest ERA in the rotation was like 2.25.
Yeah.
And DeGrom hasn't thrown a pitch yet. So they're really getting good work from their other starters. Yeah. So they're not going to go away, I don't think, this year. We can't count on them to mess it up like they have in recent years, man. They've got a lot of talent over there.
Yeah, they had like a 4 or 5 game lead, and then in 2 weeks they disappeared last year.
Right.
It was weird. It seemed like that to me. I mean, maybe it took a little bit longer than 2 weeks, but
right.
It just happened real quick.
They fell apart in the last 2 months for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. But, you know, and the other thing to look at, they got a good leader in Scherzer too. So
no doubt that. And I think that makes a big difference, man, especially with that pitching staff. When he's the bell cow, man, you're not going to be screwing around.
Yeah.
Tyler McGill has pitched great for them.
They'll be tough.
Tyler McGill has pitched great for them. We had, Stroman. He pitched, he's really having a good season. I'm not a big Stroman fan, but he's putting his performance in front of his comments this year. He's really pitching well for them. But you've got, Carlos Carrasco. That's who I was thinking of. Carlos Carrasco had pitched great in his first 3 starts. He gave it up the other day. They had a 4-1 lead and they had a huge inning. They got blown up. But before that, he's the first guy to have their ERAs are Scherzer 1.80, Chris Bassett 4 starts 2.25, he's 3-1. Tyler McGill's 3-0 with a 2.35. Carrasco now is 4.09. He was always under 2, I think. And then David Peterson has made 3 appearances, 2 starts, and is at 0.64. So they haven't even had a start yet from DeGrom, but we don't know when DeGrom's going to be back. But they're getting a lot from these other guys, so that they're going to be reckoned with. You don't want them to get a double digit lead, you know. You just don't want that to give them that confidence that they could get from that.
Right. You want to keep that New York crowd and that New York energy out of that.
Yeah. So, McNeil's hitting.
They'll be tough.
McNeil's hitting. Ken Haas hitting. Nimmo's having a bounce back year. Marte. He struggled early, but he's got 15 RBIs, even though he's only hitting 237. Guy's got 15 RBIs. Pete Alonso's got 16 ribbies, 3 homers. So they got a lot of guys. They got a lot of weapons in that lineup. So it's going to be an interesting series coming up starting Monday because you got 4 games in 3 days. So the Braves are going to have a chance to really, you know, they might split the series. But if the Braves were to go up there and win 3 out of 4, all of a sudden the whole, you know, on the other hand, if they go up and lose 3 out of 4. So that's a pretty big one. It's good to have Acuna back and play a few games before that series.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to be focusing in on that one. That's going to be, it's cool to have, you know, big series this early in the year and have a team like this to pull for,
and a built-in doubleheader, which
great.
Is unique. This year.
Yeah. That's right.
Cause they had to make up those games from the first week. So we're going to have a doubleheader built up Tuesday scheduled doubleheader.
Oh, okay.
So 4 games.
That'll be in. Yeah. Doubleheaders. Easy to lose and hard to win.
hard to sweep one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like it's easy. That Gene Garber always used to say that. They're hard to sweep and they're easy to lose too.
Hey, so we ran a teaser picture of you, just to wrap it up here. We ran a teaser picture of you and you had your pearls on at the games last year. Man, how much did you endure those World Series games? You got
probably
caught up in
too
it, didn't
much.
You?
Probably too much, David. Nancy texted me and she goes, I just saw you on Facebook or something. She goes, settle down, Dale, settle down.
They were showing you on TV, man, whipping the pearls around. It was great. People are like, isn't that Dale Murphy?
No, I was like a kid. I just, you know, just really related to Brian Snitker. I mean, I love the team and the guys, but, you know, Bob Horner called me up in the playoffs and I don't talk to Bob every day. You know, he goes, Murph, I'm so excited for Snit. This is the best. And so, you know, we're happy, of course, for the organization. But when you really kind of feel like someone from your generation, you know, drafted in the early 80s and came up under Bobby and just the whole thing, happy for the whole organization, but really happy for Snit and his whole story. Him and Ronnie have, you know, we all know the story. They've been plugging away at this, so. It was great, but I had a blast last year. I had a blast. I got caught up in the pearls and everything.
It's funny you mentioned Bob Horner because for years and years he didn't come back for hardly anything. And since this success under Snit, now you see him. He was at the Sunday thing the other day doing the talk and all that. He's around now.
Yeah, yeah. He just voted into the Georgia Hall of Fame this winter, and I was down there with him and the Georgia Sports Hall of Fame, and you know, I'm pulling for the Braves Hall of Fame soon.
Yeah, he should be in that.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I had forgotten that he's not. Wow.
Yeah, he's not, and I think it's I'm not announcing anything, but I'm pulling for that to take place.
And then how's your restaurant doing? This influx of fans into the Battery has got to have helped that, even though you're across the walkway, yeah, no, right?
Yeah, no question. Murph's, we missed the All-Star game, but getting into the playoffs and the World Series just catapulted us through the year. And yeah, we're excited. We survived this whole COVID mess, and the Braves' success has helped us a lot.
Man, the atmosphere at the Battery during the postseason and the World Series was just through the roof. I mean, I was a fan I'm a fan of downtown ballparks, and I hated the move when it happened. But I got to say that they look wise now, because it has been a huge success, and they're raking in the dough from the Battery, man.
Well, you saw what happened on Sunday night, Game 5 in the Battery.
It shut it down. There was so many people there.
I mean, it was off the chart. So
yeah,
good stuff.
All right, Murph. Well, man, you've given us more than enough of your time. We really appreciate it. And it's great to see you at the park. And let's do that thing out at your restaurant soon, man.
Thank you. I'll be at the ballpark quite a bit this summer. Got a few things going on. We got our MVP experiences, which I believe we're all sold out. But go to DaleMurphy.com and check it out. And we got some things planned. We're going to be here quite a bit. Looking forward to it. Great to see you guys. And I always say this, but maybe I'll see you on the road somewhere, maybe on the West Coast. So thanks for having me on, and all the best to Eric. Hope he's feeling better.
DaleMurphy.com. That's it?
Yep, DaleMurphy.com.
All right, man. Well, the fans love seeing you out at the park, no doubt.
Oh, thank you. It's fun. It's fun. Absolute classic. I miss the game every day, David, but I can't. David, I don't even know. People say, well, could you hit one out now? I'm like, are you kidding me? I hope I could get one to the outfield grass, but that golf ball sure travels a lot better than a baseball. So I'm going to stick to that. But love getting out there and looking forward to this summer. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I know when you do go to Cooperstown, nobody's going to appreciate it any more than you, man. That's why I look forward to you getting voted in, because I just know that's going to be – you are it belong in that setting there.
Thank you. That means a lot, David. Thank you.
All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in, and we really appreciate it. And really big thanks to Murph for sitting in for Eric. Get well, Eric. Or you're going to get I forgot. Who's the guy? I can't think right now. Who's the guy that when somebody was hurt and never went back? I can't even think.
Wally Pipped.
Wally Pipped. You're going to get Wally Pipped, man. Man, getting old, man, forgetting things like
Wally
that.
Wally Pipped, right?
He went Wally out Pipped for a, that's right.
For Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig. Lou Gehrig.
Never came back.
Oh, Wally Pipped. All right.
Don't get Wally Pipped, Derek. That's it. 7:55 is real. We are out. Appreciate it.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.